I took the field needed.
Yeah.
Okay.
Are you turning this on?
Yep.
Okay, I thought that's what he said. Okay, let's bring to order the City of Newport Retirement Board of Trustees meeting of July 27th, 2023. It is now 10:08. I'm Mark Salins, sitting in as chair of the meeting for Braulio, who couldn't be here. I'm the vice chair. And let's see, we also, why don't we just go ahead and do a quick round of saying who's here for the tape, starting with you, Bob.
Robert Westerman.
Steve Stewart.
Dave Heater.
Oh, Joselle Kason.
Steve Bonner.
Andrew Hagerty.
And Kay. Okay, that's all the members attending. Doesn't appear we have any public, so we'll skip the public comments. Moving on to approval of the minutes, we have minutes for the January 26th meeting, the March 3rd meeting, and the April 27th meeting. Does anyone have any corrections? Did you have one? All right, seeing as there's none, by unanimous approval, we'll go ahead and pass the minutes.
And make a motion to approve. I'll make a motion to approve.
All right.
Second.
Thank you. Any other comments? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All those in not favor, same sign. Sorry for the bad habits. Lincoln County Soil and Water Conservation District has this bad habit of, if nobody disagrees, they just, they do that. So, and they meet every month, so I get in a bad habit.
Chair.
All right.
I abstained because I wasn't trustee at the 26th.
Oh, okay. I guess I should have split them up, but it doesn't matter anyway because they're all passed. Thanks for clarifying that.
We had a motion, we had it.
Second, yeah. And actually, I was thinking that while I said it, so, but thanks for getting that clarified on the record. Okay, moving on down the agenda, we've already handed over the signed authority form to Columbia Trust. And now it's time to review the annual employee meeting agenda. Do you have an agenda in here anyplace?
It's just a review, but we will do this exactly the same as we've always done.
That's what I was gonna say. We have one meeting for the defined contribution and then the other group. And we'll do that meeting at 9:30.
Our regular meeting will be at 9:30 to 10:30, starting about 10:45. We'll have the first meeting, it goes about a half hour, 45 minutes, and the second one.
Okay, and that's gone off really well the last few years, so.
And then Steve, and I think Andrew stayed for that. And then Steve will have individual, if anybody really wants to sit down with Steve after lunch, like around 1:15, they could schedule a meeting, just self-meeting, to go over maybe their retirement. And at that time, we should have all the books to everyone.
Okay, awesome. Thanks for that, Kay. All right, well, moving on to what we all anxiously await to hear, the investment market review and liquidity report. Are you ready?
Ready.
You're ready.
On page two is economic overview, a number of different data points that our investment team takes a look at, and then I'll dive into the portfolios after that. From an overall standpoint, US GDP, we actually just got new second quarter GDP numbers coming through this morning. And GDP growth for the second quarter was 2.4%. So higher than some economists expected, still pretty, for lack of a better term, people called it a Goldilocks economy. It's not too hot, it's not too cold. But we are seeing a number of different signs that indicating that we are seeing the economy slowing down. So we do expect the economy to slow down in the second half of this year. And going into 2024, we expect an additional slowdown. And that's kind of hand in hand with the interest rate environment we're in. The Fed has ratcheted up interest rates just recently. Yesterday was the most recent one. So we're now sitting at 5.25% to 5.5% short-term rates from the Federal Reserve. As we know, the reason for that is there's been hot inflation over the last year and a half, 2 years. Their goal is to try and tamper that inflation down. But the challenge with that is when you ratchet up interest rates, it makes everything more expensive to borrow, tighter credit standards. It tends to slow down the economy, but hand in hand with that is an effort to slow down the inflation that we're seeing. So I think the Fed is ratcheted up, and they've done a pretty good job so far. They've got a difficult balancing act and not driving the economy into a recession. That was a fear earlier in the year. Not so much now. I think there's a less chance that we're likely to get to hit a recession going into next year. But and I think they actually came out yesterday and said they don't expect us to hit a recession. So the jury's still out on that one, but I think the chances of a recession are less than they were last quarter. But having said that, we still think there's going to be pretty low GDP growth, probably between 0.5% and 1% for the year, at the end of the year, maybe 1% next year, and then getting back up to 2% in 2025. Doesn't seem like a lot, but you know, from a long-term historical perspective, 2% growth for the largest economy in the world, the U.S., is pretty healthy growth. So 2% is back to kind of normal. 0 to 1% is pretty slow, but still positive. It's when we get into negative territory, we worry about recessionary environment. I mentioned inflation. Inflation has come down quite a bit since last year, but it's still, you know, relatively high. You know, the PCE is the number that the Fed looks at in terms of what their target, their long-term target's 2%. It's still floating around 4% now. So the goal is to ratchet that down, and they're probably not going to get there until 2025, which leads us to believe interest rates might be a little bit higher than people were expecting. We think, you know, interest rates, the Fed rate's going to be above 5 between now and the end of the year, is our opinion. But going into 24, if inflation starts to come down and we don't see a recession and unemployment still seems to be fairly okay, which it is now, they'll likely start to decrease their interest rates next year is our best guess right now. Two parts of the economy, consumer spending and industrial production. Kind of two sides to a coin here, because industrial production has basically been in a recessionary mode since January. But consumer spending is really what's been keeping inflation afloat. There's been pretty healthy consumer spending, even in the face of high inflation, even in the face of higher interest rates. So that's been one of the driving factors that we're seeing, is this lingering inflation has been sticking around. A lot of people still traveling, a lot of people going out to restaurants and bars. So we're seeing a services part of the economy is still fairly healthy, but we're starting to see some things that would indicate that that's going to slow down. One would be, you know, savings rates, credit card balances are going up. People are starting to get a little more spending on credit. That indicates
savings rates are going down and credit cards are going up.
Yeah. Okay. So at the same time, their savings are depleting and credit card balances are going up. So people are still going out and spending money, but they're probably doing it more on credit, which would lead us to believe that things aren't as, you know, maybe as good as they were previously. In low interest rate environments, you know, your credit card balances are a lot, your interest rate's a lot lower, but right now credit card interest rates are fairly high. So people going out spending on credit, it's not going to be as easy to continue spending money like they used to.
But you can get a 5% CD.
What's that?
But you can get a 5% CD.
Yeah. But
first time in a long time.
But so even those have changed drastically. I know because, you know, we've had our house for sale. And back when we thought a firm seller or buyer, but they couldn't sell their place, they needed to do that. And it's like, oh my God. I think our OSU credit union was at like 6.7% or something like that. And each month you could watch the offering ratchet down. You know, it's that golden opportunity sort of when it reached its peak. Now those were on 1 year, I think, bonds or something like that.
Yeah.
But you know, it's like, you're right. It's been a long, long time since it's been that opportunity. Since I interrupted, a quick question. Does 2023 probability of recession, with the news that's been out just like in the last week, if you were to look and do this same sort of forecast in the, is say, a month from now, I think there's a good likelihood that that chance in 2023 would actually drop below what it has been.
Yeah, this 65%, oh, I'll take a step back. This Bloomberg consensus analyst, this isn't our guess. This is takes a consensus of a bunch of economists around the country. But yeah, if we were to take a look at this number, probably next week it'll be quite a bit lower because the Fed actually came out and said we don't think there'll be a recession. So that'll probably sway a lot of economists' opinion. And, you know, this is a little bit stale. I saw a number this week that said it was under 50. So, yeah, we're seeing that number come down quite a bit.
Well, I mean, it's just been kind of fascinating but frustrating for me because trying to sell a house, of course, what's happening right now is the worst thing in the world. You would not believe the number of people we've had that couldn't quite make it. And you start looking at the fact that 3% difference can be $1,000 a month on a payment.
Huge. Oh, yeah.
Over 3 years. So you're like, you know, 2,000 something instead of 1,000 something. That's a huge difference in this community. And it's like, well, sorry.
Yeah.
You know, we can't qualify.
I think not long ago, mortgage rates were under 4%.
Yeah.
Would have been some three.
No problem.
But when you double that, it's essentially, you know, twice the payment, half the home price you could have gotten.
It's just terrible.
It has a huge impact. So, I mean, there's areas of the economy we are seeing have huge impacts on interest rates. It's, you know, housing has been an issue. You know, anything that involves, you know, borrowing money. So, essentially, you know, interest rates have gone up. That makes credit much more difficult to get, more expensive. Even if you're probably qualified, it's about a 40 min. So, yeah.
Is there a factor of, like, you know, people beginning to spend more on credit, is there a factor where it gets to the point where some people are actually forced to, like, the counter of, like, dipping into their savings in order to pay that off, and then you have that backlash of savings for the country going down? Does that happen?
Yeah, I mean, it typically happens when you start to see difficult economic times. So, you know, whether it's, like, people losing their job, they got to dip into their savings, pay everything on credit. Whether they want to continue their lifestyle, going out partying and going to restaurants, and put it on credit, which a lot of young people do. But where you typically see that as a big issue is when the economy does go into recession. So you think back in 2007, 2008, there were massive layoffs across the board in like almost every sector, especially housing, manufacturing, building sector got hit really hard. But we don't think there's a systemic risk. Anything like that right now?
I didn't think so.
If we did hit a recession, I've been saying this to clients since the beginning of the year, even if we do hit a recession, I don't think it's going to be a long one or a very deep one because I don't think it's going to hit every or even most sectors of the economy because as you see with consumer spending, which is two-thirds of the economy, is still really healthy.
Right.
And you think about the job market, unemployment's historically, this is a really low unemployment right now still. So we have a ways to go with unemployment before it even becomes historically like a really high number. And I don't think we'll get there because there's far more job openings still than there are people looking for jobs. And so that's a weird dynamic. You know, it's good for people looking for work. It's bad for people trying to hire. It's a struggle for a lot for small businesses trying to hire people too. So that would lead me to believe that, you know, there's still going to be job openings even if we do hit some type of technical recession.
Right.
So,
all right, thank you.
Yeah, good points. We think the Fed just raised the interest rates. I mentioned we think, you know, it really depends on where inflation goes between now and their next meeting in September. But we tend to lean on the side that we don't think they'll raise in September. We think inflation is going to start trickling down. It should come through in the data. But then again, you know, it's been hanging out longer than most people expected. For the second quarter, you know, the capital markets, equity markets, and bond markets both were positive, which is a positive sign, especially coming out of last year. I'll move on to page 3, the summary of the portfolio. So as of the end of the quarter, this gives you a snapshot. As a reminder, there's two different, essentially two different portfolios, one being the defined benefit, which you can think of as like a pension fund, and then the other one being the defined contribution, which is for the newer employees. And so there's a summary there. Again, the defined benefit is broken up into, one, really the bulk of the assets is in a growth portfolio to try and grow over the long term. And then there's a small, what we call the trust or cash liquidity account. What we do is we just have some cash in there for known distributions that we are distributing. Page four, this gives you a snapshot of where the capital growth account was at the end of the quarter. So at the end of the quarter, we were, as a reminder, this is a balanced portfolio, so kind of, you know, balanced, you know, on average between 40 and 70% equities. And so right now it's at 51, almost 51.5% in equities or stocks, almost 37% fixed income. Alternatives, which is a real estate income fund, about 2%. And then we've had a strategic allocation to cash going into last year just because of the volatility that we've been seeing, close to 9.6% cash. We don't typically do that, but we're a little bit more defensive, and that's one of the positions that we've been taking. But something our investment team's taking a look at, allocating, moving forward. We think the markets right now are fairly valued, with some stocks being maybe ahead of the skis a little bit, others maybe being undervalued. But overall, a pretty fair valuation, but we're cautiously optimistic given the current environment. So looking for opportunities for the market to dip before we kind of put that cash to work. For the quarter, the account was up a little over 2%, you know, primarily driven by equities. Stocks were up about 4%. Fixed income was down a little bit for the quarter. Alternatives did okay, about 2% in real estate. For the year-to-date column, the account's just shy of 6% return for the year so far, 5.9%, primarily driven by equities, 9%, fixed income, 2.7%. One thing to note, the equities, a little bit underperformance here, 9% versus the 13.9%, primarily driven by, you know, some underperformance in our large cap value manager, something we're taking a look at maybe changing. But we've been tilting a little bit more value defensive coming out of last year, given the volatility. And a lot of the market return we've seen so far has been driven by just seven stocks, primarily big large cap tech stocks. So there's quite a divergence in the market between what have really been pushing the market. It's very top heavy in these large cap tech stocks. Those are some of the ones we think maybe a little ahead of themselves right now in terms of valuation. But we'd anticipate that balance between value and growth style to balance out over the course of the next 12 months or so. And then each column after that gives you an indication of average annualized returns over the time period. On page five, just gives you kind of a historical perspective. One column that I do look at here is the inception to date column, kind of where we started, what's been added to the portfolio, what's been earned in income, which is usually dividends and interest, and then market appreciation, which is primarily stock returns. So in the inception to date column, it gives you a little historical reference here. Initial value was $537,000, but additions after that was $4.3 million or so. And then over time, portfolio has been able to grow from income and market appreciation and get you close to $8.77 million there.
Well, that's pretty decent growth.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I focus on, like, the longer time periods. Even the 10-year column, you see, start with 3.2, added two more, so basically five, but you grew another, you know, over three and a half to get up to 8.7. It's just a good indication or an example of, you know, staying invested over the long run, even throughout market, you know, sell-offs, it really pays off. Being diligent about your strategy. Don't try and time the market. It's about the time you spend in the market. And you can see over time, so over short time periods, this performance summary here, you can see CPI, which is an inflation figure, plus 3%. So think about inflation plus another 3% is kind of the benchmark there. Short time periods, like you look at a, you know, 1-year period, you know, even with seven 7%, kind of in line, but over long periods of time, the goal is to really try and, you know, outperform inflation over a long time. And that's been kind of skewed given the last year and a half. We've seen historically higher inflation than we've seen in 40 years. But staying invested, don't try and time the market, is my recommendation. Page six gives you a little closer look at the growth portfolio. So this pie chart's a little bit different. The one thing to note here is the red versus the yellow. We do have international exposure, but we are overweight U.S. Equities versus international. Even given maybe the higher valuations we've seen in U.S. versus international, we still think it makes sense from a long-term investment standpoint to have international. It helps with diversification. International funds actually have outperformed some U.S. funds this year, so just a healthy balance of diversification. The top 10 performer shows you what's really kind of been driving the returns so far this year, and it's been growth. As opposed to last year, growth style funds and large cap growth really underperformed. This year, large cap growth has done very well. You can see here this fund's up 22% for the year. Small cap growth, this New Horizons, T. Rowe Price New Horizons is a mid cap growth. This other T. Rowe Price is an international fund, and then Goldman Sachs International. So you can see there's been some international funds that have done pretty well too. So a healthy mix there.
You talked to, can I ask a question?
Yeah.
Sure. For the chair, you talked about some of these investments being top heavy with the tech stocks. Typically that's Apple, Google, and the rest.
Yeah.
Are you tracking that to see if any of these investment categories are putting too much into those tech stocks, because we've identified where some are, and just with their growth have increased to proportion of that we're not comfortable with in some of our investments. But are you taking that into consideration?
Certainly, yeah. We take a look at each of the funds that we do, and you know, we take into consideration, you know, where they're focused on in terms of how much exposure they have to certain names. And when we're picking and choosing names like that too, but you're right, there has been a sway in the rapid growth of some of these large cap tech names, where they become an outsized portion of the index. So even if you look at the S&P 500, which is the top 500 companies in the U.S., the top 10 represent, you know, quite a bit. I think over 20% of the whole index. So it does become kind of top heavy. But yeah, we keep that in mind. And that's why we balance growth with value. So rather than just take an index approach, we're trying to be strategic about it and say, okay, you know, growth really had quite a bit of run here. Maybe it's time that we, you know, lower growth and increase value. And we're kind of tilted that way a little bit more value than growth, because we think at this point, you know, growth's had its run, value probably, you know, has some opportunity. And we've seen that with, you know, the Dow index, a little more value oriented too, has done pretty well as of lately. Good point. Good question. Page seven is just a snapshot of the liquidity account. It's called the Defined Benefit Trust, but it's a liquidity cash account. Nothing really to look at here. It's just a cash account, but you know, it's in a cash vehicle that is yielding about 5% right now. So, short term risk free cash just waiting to get distributed. Page eight, the defined contribution, look very similar. We manage these portfolios hand in hand, so the allocation almost identical to what we saw with the defined benefit. Returns should look very similar, if not almost identical. So, you know, just shy of 6% for the year, 5.9% return year to date. Again, equities, stocks have done better than bonds, and then over the time period there, you can see from year to year, average annualized returns over the time period. Page nine, same that we saw previously in the other report. I'll focus on the inception to date column. Again, this gives you kind of a snapshot of what's happening. So the portfolio started at 3.2 million. Over the time period, over 2.8 million has been withdrawn or distributed out of the portfolio. But we have seen growth and income earned. It's kind of that balanced, diversified approach, getting income and market appreciation. And then the portfolio is still above where it was started at 3.43 million. So over the long run, that's really the goal for all of these portfolios is to meet the obligations of retirees, not take too much risk, make sure we're doing it and getting best risk-adjusted returns that we have. We're not trying to hit home runs every year. We're trying to do it in a disciplined fashion where we're not taking too much risk, but still being invested in the market to take advantage of the growth. And statistics and academic studies have shown that really is the best way, especially from a fiduciary standpoint, that we and you guys have for the retirement fund is the best way to do it over the long run.
You know, I was sitting here thinking, since we talked about the annual meeting coming up, looking at the performance of the entire retirement program, you know, if you were somebody getting ready to retire, just imagine your smaller amount that you have. I mean, it tells the story right here of why you shouldn't take out a lump sum unless you plan on, you know, somehow magically spending your everyday managing it or hiring somebody to manage it or, you know, because it's just incredible the amount we paid out over time. And yet, and when I first started thinking about it was, gee, if everyone takes a payout, our account sure is going to get a lot smaller. But the fact is, it doesn't if they, you know, continue on with, you know, getting their monthly checks and reaping the benefit of why we do this.
Yeah. So. Yeah, I mean, it's a, you know, we have a very disciplined process, you know, and it's just as a trust company, that's the way we invest.
Right.
You know, if I, you know, knock on wood somewhere, get hit by a truck. You know, there's another person at the company that comes in, they look at the investment policy statement,
yeah.
They see how we're invested, they can take over. So, I mean, we do it for clients, you know, all
now,
the time.
You know, of course, having said that, there's all kinds of combinations out there. I mean, maybe you happen to be in a marriage where, you know, your wife happened to have a job that made a lot more than you did, and you've made the decision for that to be your retirement monthly check. Kind of stay invested, and the other one is kind of your holiday. I mean, everyone has that right to decide that. But if your sole source of retirement is just the one thing, I just can't imagine pulling it all out. And then, you know, you start figuring out what it's going to cost you to live 20, 30 more years if you're lucky, even 15 years if you're not lucky. So.
But we have had employees that have done
I know. Yeah. And like I said, individual circumstances, you know, you could have somebody whose family left them money or, you know, whatever. We don't know. We don't know the details.
Because you thought that you could manage it better than
they take it out and invest it someplace else.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, like I said, if you've got a knack for that, you're good at it. But I know too many people.
Either I keep working or I retire.
I'm
going to
go buy my $80,000 boat.
So what are the laws now in, let's say that we hired a horrible company and they mismanaged our funds and we didn't have funds. What are the protections now for employees if these kinds of funds go bad?
Yeah, it's likely that the first step is who is the fiduciary, and then they would be responsible.
And they have
insurance cover. And they would cover.
Well, that's what I'm saying. That's usually that's the case. If they go out of business, or they don't have the funds to support the, so that's my question. Is there, I know that there was a big problem in the 80s and there were some law changes, and I don't know if those laws are still, have been watered down over time or?
Yeah, I'll be honest, I'm not that privy on the laws surrounding.
Oh, you're not a lawyer, I just let you might know because you're a
fiduciary. He's not an attorney.
Yeah, no, but he's right. Like if you have a fiduciary, like for example, if we're managing a trust or a foundation for somebody and we take really risky bets and the portfolio, you know, goes to zero or we lose 90% of it, we'd be on the hook. They'd sue us. And of course, we wouldn't get to that point because we, you know, are constantly monitoring the portfolios.
Right.
But if something like that happened, they could sue us and say, hey, you weren't doing your fiduciary responsibility and watching my portfolio. You took way too much risk. Probably be a lawsuit. And judge will look at it and be like, yeah, why you guys 50% in Tesla and it went belly up or something. We can't do that.
It's been a long time ago now.
Tesla's okay. And Tesla's doing okay now.
Food is okay
I thought
now.
There were some Tesla's examples okay. of that that occurred control. During the Great Recession that we had. But it's been so long, I can't remember any details.
What's yeah, that? I mean, there were, yeah.
Weren't there some managed retirement programs that went bust or something like that?
Well, yeah, a lot of them were either somewhat low, some of them too aggressive or too aggressive with their
yeah.
assumptions. I mean, if you think even think about, you know, PERS was probably pretty aggressive. I think they had like a, you know, 8% expected returns forever.
Right.
And so, okay, we'll promise to pay 8% out. Well,
and they hang on. They hung on to it for
yeah,
25
so
years too long.
I think they adjusted that, but. A lot of pension funds, in my opinion, were just too aggressive on their assumptions, thinking yeah. that, you know, stock market returns are going to give you 10%, you know, and they just say on average every year forever. Well, that's probably not. In reality, it's probably closer to 5 to 7%.
Right.
So.
Yeah, I was thinking back too when, I wonder when PERS originally generated that because 70s weren't all that hot, were they, for interest
no.
rates?
I
think 80s, 90s.
Yeah, 80s, 90s were good.
So you had like, you know, the dot-com bubble.
Yeah.
You know, prior to that, you know, people were.
Well, buying. The other part I know from personal experience is they didn't really cap it either. I had several of my predecessors who couldn't afford to stay working because the payout from PERS was at such a high point. You know, now in the various tiers they've corrected, they don't let it float upwards forever. Well, you know, your account made 28%, so we're going to pay you out at 28%. No.
Wow.
That doesn't keep you in business.
No.
So, yeah, literally in the late 90s, early 2000s, guys who just said, you know, I'm losing money if I stay here working, so I'm going to retire.
Yeah.
And then they finally got aggressive. It was right after that that they made the adjustments and tried to correct with tier two, and that wasn't aggressive enough, and then we have tier three. So
I know 2008 decimated the defined benefit, at least the private defined benefits across the country.
Yeah.
And it was, some of it was having higher expectations, but a lot of it was just having the equity disappear overnight.
Yeah, just gone.
But
yeah,
do you recall any follow-up of like hearing about what happened at losses?
I can tell you, they started
grading
those plans in different colors. A lot of plans were considered red plans, and they had to do quite a bit, and some of them are still pulling themselves out of the hole.
Yeah.
But over time, we saw, just like an example, in Tacoma, they ended up, their plan was decimated by that. The contribution rate at the time, I think, was $5 per an hour per employee. They had to triple that, but then the current employees under that new allocation were only receiving a dollar of that money towards their future benefits. The rest was just going back to bring the
to cover the losses.
Wow.
Losses.
Well, that's not going to happen again. So.
Yeah.
We're too well managed for that.
Yeah.
Any other questions? That was great. Appreciate it.
No, thank you.
Okay. Let's see.
Here, I got a couple of questions.
Sure, go ahead.
I don't know if it's the proper person to ask these of, but how many participants do we have in the defined benefit plan versus the defined contribution?
I looked it up at one time. I can't remember what the number was now.
Was it 25 of us?
Yeah, it's not as many as you think.
I'm not in it any longer, but I'm a beneficiary. I mean, I think at one time there was 25 left that's still working within with the CME board. How many were?
Well, I think in the currently working is probably closer to 13, 10 to 13.
Yeah,
so
I thought it was down
yeah.
further.
But what I'm saying, as far as the group of us that are in the defined, that we're all into, we are retired, but we're still going to be getting that benefit. So you have the ones that are still, you know, that are still working, 13, but then you, I thought there was 30, 25 or more that we actually.
Yeah, it seems like it was in that range somewhere.
So we have some employees that don't work here anymore, but they're just letting their retirement.
Yeah, they're just getting a monthly check.
Until they're old enough, kind of like what I did with the state of Oregon. I left there and went to Lincoln County for 13 years.
What's the expected date for that program to be final?
Last retiree.
Last retiree.
Which, as I was sort of pointing out, let's say you have the last person retire under that. So you know you're not going to have any more cash payouts. But you will be continuing to manage those people's funds for.
Yeah, you have monthly payouts for until they.
You know, until they.
All those people, yeah.
And it depends on the longevity.
Yeah.
People retire and they're 2 years and then. And then some of us are going to be here for another 20 years.
Which in a way is why this has been kind of a good strategy.
You included me in that, us, right?
Yeah.
Well, we've been kind of co-managing both accounts and that really is kind of a good way to go because, you know, you could come to the day where there's so little draw on the original retirement program that it kind of helps bolster, you know, the other side and vice versa.
So those 12 or 13 are still having contributions paid into this plan under the old system?
Well, the defined benefit, we vote every year and we either do the 10 or 20, I think 10, 15 or 20
year.
Yeah.
And then we project out how much we need to pay in.
Right.
We stayed at the 10 year now.
So it's not a set amount per employee?
Yeah, it's not a set amount per.
I think we did that at the meeting we interviewed him, right?
Yeah, I think so.
We have Silverstone give us numbers and you will have that for the next meeting, correct?
I don't know if it'll be the next meeting, but it'll be coming up here probably within the next few months.
It's an actuarial report that an outside firm does. And then they, based on the returns and the number of participants and life expectancy and all their actuarial assumptions, they come out and say, okay, based on like a 10-year horizon, here's what we think the city should pay to you know, bolster the portfolio.
Theoretically, those actuaries should bump up a little bit because, you know, COVID was bad enough that they actually downplayed the average life expectancy a little bit.
And they do say, give us a percentage that we are funded. It'll say, we were way up there like 93%.
98 at one point.
Yeah.
For a short time.
Yeah. Then they changed
like
the life expectancy.
Yeah. Something like that. Yeah.
That's what I was saying. COVID will help bring that down just a little.
Yeah.
Well, and the market affects that number too.
Yeah,
so.
True. So do we have anyone who's going to retire or announce that they're going to retire in the next 3 months before the next meeting?
I haven't seen any paperwork come through yet, so.
That's usually what we try to cover in this next agenda item is who's upcoming. With the last quarter, we had a couple, if I remember right.
Yep.
Yep.
Yeah, as far as I know, I haven't seen any paperwork showing anyone retiring. So.
I do think in the October meeting, we will have the actuary report, though, won't we?
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure it'll be October.
Follow-up question. How many active participants do you have in the defined contribution plan?
I didn't bring that information with me. I haven't
just
looked at
numbers.
In the defined benefit, I think there's currently 44 people getting payouts. Defined contribution, I don't know. I mean, that would be most employees.
They get paid out if they retire.
We have what, like 100 and how many total employees do we have?
About 110, 113.
And that's minus police, right?
Yeah. No, that includes police.
Okay,
so
how many? They're on PERS, though.
Yeah, they're on PERS, and so is the fire department. So
if you take the fire department and police department and the 25 off of that 100 and some, then the remainder should be those people paying into the new program.
How many pay positions do we have in the fire department now?
I think we have 8 people.
That's what he's guessing at.
God, I remember there was one. Remember, only the chief was paid. Or maybe one or two, and maybe there was a couple paid, I guess. There was a
follow-up question.
Yeah, I thought we had a chief and one paid off.
Yeah, Toby was an assistant then. I think he was paid, so.
Are they all have separate accounts?
Got sirens all day yesterday.
Their contributions. All
day long sirens.
Yeah, so we probably have just under 50 people.
Isn't broken out in separate accounts per retiree.
They're getting payments now currently.
Is tracked by
currently
finance group. So So they track, you know, how long they've been employed and what their percentage is. We just manage the portfolio as a whole.
Gotcha.
To try and grow it over time. And then all the details about, you know, okay, I want to retire and this is what you get, and these are your options, that's, the city takes care of that side.
So, did you hear that, Bob? Roughly, the guesstimate is 50 employees paying into.
A little under 50, probably, so.
So, and, I mean, you kind of get a glimpse of the fact that that's not nearly as mature of a program, because you've got 50 people paying into it, and yet it's, you know, half the size of the other account. So it'll be certainly continuing to grow and bolster over time, so.
Because I believe when, in the defined contribution, when someone leaves, they have to take the payout, or.
They take anything out, we don't, they don't.
Gotcha.
Oh.
No, they don't stay with company of trust, because when, if you were contribution.
I didn't remember that, do you remember that?
Yeah, then they, but that's where they go to Steve next, in October, say, hey, I'm thinking of retiring, on the defined contribution, what would it look like that I have in this fund? And then generally, the city does.
Because the others don't have a choice.
No.
Doesn't, I don't think, no, it's a strong requirement, but they want you to have some, you have to open a fund to put it in.
Hey, you could transfer it so you don't get taxed at the time, so.
I think you can, but I think it's a big deal.
You have your 401K, it, at Umqua's, whatever, and they transfer it into that, and then from there you go.
Okay.
Do the employees that are participants in the defined contribution get statements on how much they have?
Once a year.
Once a year?
Yep, yep.
That's the October.
That's the October.
They'll have their statement.
Gotcha.
And then they can sit down and talk to Steve.
Although, as I was pointing out, if they wanted to get a sense of their security as a group, these reports are a good way to do that. It doesn't necessarily tell you that you're, you know, what your individual bid is, but does show you that it's not tanking. So.
So then that'll be our next agenda, really, then, is the actuary report, right?
Yeah.
That's pretty much the whole meeting.
So that's what I was gonna say, we're on to develop next agenda, so that'll be the actuary report and making sure we have our ducks in order for the.
Review once again, the, we'll have that all spelled out for you time-wise.
For the meeting.
Okay, this meeting goes to 10:30, 10:45, this starts, and Steve generally will have the Silverstone to pass out. Because then at that time, with the next agenda in January, is to make the decision, what do we tell the budget committee?
Right.
So backing up one to number six, did we really answer number six? Did we get an answer? Steve didn't really have a firm answer for us.
Well, what I got out of that was.
Nobody's applied for retirement.
There's about 25 total people still in that program, but only about 12 or 13 of them are actively working. So about half of them are just letting their retirement kind of cook in there, which is what I did with the state of Oregon.
Right.
And then none of those remaining 12 or 13 apparently plan to retire in the next 3 months.
Yeah, I haven't gotten any notification yet, so.
We've got roughly 50 or so.
Not yet.
In the new program, and then you have fire and police.
One last question. Sorry to be bothered, I'm just.
No, that's good.
Head wrapped around the programs. Does the city offer, or is it these employee meetings, education on retiring or on what they can do with their money when they do withdraw?
Legally, we just tell them that they need to, you know, hire an investment for true investment advice. The city can't give advice as to what to do, you know, with their funds at that point, you know, especially if they retire, so it's kind of.
We can't really either, as board members, give individual advice to anybody if they ask us. We're not supposed to be able to, yeah.
I'm not suggesting that we start giving.
Well, that's why, that's part of why when I spouted that opinion about leaving your money in there, I mean, it is a personal choice, and there are plenty of examples where people could make it work out just fine and whatnot, it's just.
Yeah, I think in the past, they've explained the retirement options and how that works. And you brought up in the past, say, hey, if you're looking to retire, you should probably talk talk to a financial advisor or something.
Right, yeah.
And I know one, and I can maybe get some business cards or get a contact for a gentleman that could help out with that kind of stuff. If people want to talk to an advisor.
Well, yeah, and I'd be the first to say, and you probably, anyone who's retired would say the same thing, managing your money when you're working, it's a whole different story when you become a retiree. And, you know, unless you want to include in your portfolio going back to work, you know, you pretty much are done with the idea that I'm going to get a cost of living raise next year and I'm going to promote myself to a job that pays 10% more, all that's over with. So you really have to kind of be taking a sort of different financial look, you know, at what you're going to do.
The only reason I ask is we spend quite a bit of time and effort making sure that our participants are educated on the investments or have, or at least provided some education by actual professionals on withdrawing their money, whether or not to take a lump sum individual payments or even purchase an annuity with their with their cash.
And I believe Nationwide, they do give they do offer webinar trainings on various topics, and some of those are about those specific topics too. So,
well, and there's so many topics too. It's sort of like, you know, if I were to use my wife's parents as an example, they made the decision at a relatively young age. They were retired, but relatively young age, to move into one of these progressive retirement homes. First their own apartment, then whatever. And it's like, if you want to include that in your portfolio, better go check out what some of those places, what some of those places cost. You know, it's a pretty different trajectory than if you're going to stay in your own home. Is it ready for you to age in place? Can you afford to hire somebody to help you? I mean, all those things really should go in as part of the actuary of my life, you know. So,
and I think the one thing that city does provide for the employees is especially defined benefit, okay? We get paid into the retirement, okay? But you have also the option to say, okay, I want to put this much money into Nationwide.
Right.
And then he comes, they have someone come in, I think twice a year, and sit down with you and go over things. So that's the way they're providing some type of education.
Good question, though. It's important.
Yeah, that's a really good option to have. Okay, last item. Check your calendars, everybody. Does anyone have any conflicts with October 26th? I hope not, because that's the big one when we get the employees here. No.
We are required to have at least an annual employee meeting.
So Thursday, October 26th at 9:30, and then proceeding through the agenda that Kay laid out for us at the start of the meeting.
And it was laid out before me.
We're sitting. Well, you were here the first time we put it together.
I know, but I'm just saying we just sort of stuck with the. It worked out well.
Yeah.
Can we get that calendar hit as soon as possible?
We can.
Yeah. Thank you.
The time I remember was years ago, and I was still a city councilor as well. And we'd had one of these meetings, and all of a sudden it was like, and Mark is going to explain this part. But I had missed the meeting, so nobody alerted me to the fact that I was coming.
That's what happened when you missed a meeting before.
I was pretty good, though. I bumbled through pretty good. Pretty fast with the papers. All right. Unless there's any other questions, I guess meeting adjourned at 10:56 a.m. Thank you, everyone.
Thank you.
Good meeting, good presentations, good questions. Never be shy about asking questions as a newbie. Like, I can't believe that I forgot that under the new program, you have to find somebody to manage it for you.
But, you know, we all learn from
I forgot all about that. I mean, I must have known it. There's only so much room left in the gray matter, right, Dave?
Well, that's my excuse. That's for sure. Like, I just...
them.
I know if you guys ever do this, I know my Clara will say, you know, she'll be headed down to the bedroom or something. She'll